It is time for us to be joined by our good friends, Marcy and David, from theberkshireedge.com. TheBerkshireEdge.com provides news and information on events throughout the South County area and surrounding areas, and they're always there on the web. Once again, TheBerkshireEdge.com, and they join us here on a Wednesday morning. Good morning, Marcy. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
It's nice to have sun in 35 degrees, I'll tell you.
Yes. Oh, it's nice. The sun is beautiful. It's streaming in my window here, and...
And 35, for some reason, feels a lot warmer. Maybe it's because we had that 4 or 5 inches of snow the other day. So.
Yeah.
Well, what's the weather on Mars, do you know?
I don't know, but I know, I keep going to that clip with the microphone.
And
and listening to the winds, and it's, you know what, it's amazing. That's all I can say.
I think it's absolutely, it's irresistible, too. There's something about it.
And those live photo, I mean, not just photographs, but video of the winds blowing across the surface of Mars. It's amazing.
And all that information is traveling 300 million miles. I mean, really, you can't appreciate it enough. And it is...
No, and I'm actually surprised. I mean, David said this yesterday. I'm surprised that more hasn't been made of it. Yeah. You know, there doesn't seem to be a television station that's broadcasting it. I mean, David's been watching it on, you know, on his phone from footage from NASA. It's not getting the kind of attention that the space shots used to get.
Well, I think it's because people nowadays don't live in the age of science fiction. When we were younger, this was science fiction to us, and now here we are, and we're actually seeing live and video and hearing live things from Mars. I mean, it's just
amazing.
It's just amazing. Well, let's get on to the more local stuff. We'll come back 300 million miles to the to our area. And you've got I just did a news story on this morning. The address at Wacona Regional High School, basically with the education commissioner calling for students to return to in-school classes by April. And the story that I was reading on that said is there any pushback locally on that?
Not that we've heard so far, but I'm wondering about that too, because it's not as if the virus is going away, but we got vaccinated the other day, and but in any case, the state education the education chief is, trying to, reestablish some semblance of an educational year for Massachusetts students.
Well, it's especially, I mean, around the country, the problem has also been with the teachers who feel, unsafe. We haven't heard from them yet.
Well, that's the interesting thing here is I think everybody agrees that students should be in school. I don't think, anybody is against that idea at all. I think it's the way they get educated. The homeschooling and the remote schooling is a substitute, but it's not a substitute for the real thing. But here's where you have a clash of cultures. You have young students, and then you have teachers that are anywhere from 30, 40 to 50 years old. The susceptibility to having it worse is really incumbent is more on the teachers than it is on the students. And so it creates that little division.
Yeah.
Yes, it does. And that's been a problem across the country, that the teachers are nervous and they're not being vaccinated, I think.
Well, Connecticut finally allowing no matter what age teacher you are to get back. That has finally been talked about by the governor. But I'd be honest with you, you would have thought that along with all the first responders and everything, teachers would have been at the front of the list so you could get students back in school.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just common sense because there's nothing, I think students are appreciating now the value of going to school as opposed to not going to school.
I think you're right.
Yeah, just the social interaction, never mind the school.
Oh, I know.
So anyway, well, that's I think it's interesting that that story came out of Massachusetts, out of your section of Massachusetts.
Well, it came from a speech that the State Commissioner of Education gave here in the Berkshires, in Dalton, the other day. So he's not doing it in Boston. He's doing it out here, although it was reported by the Globe. And they're going to start with younger kids and then go to, you know, and go to, they're going to start with elementary school and then middle school and high school. But they and it, you know, it seems kind of odd to be doing it in April. The school year is almost over.
I guess they want to try to get a semblance of normalcy back. But your next story, and then it's cropped by your next story, which is just a terrific story, and that is a story about the two Southern Berkshire High School students that have created a speaker series on sustainability in the environment.
Isn't that something? Right.
Yeah.
I mean, these two, I mean, these are terrific young women. I mean, they're seniors now, and they started this last year. You know, they started created a composting program in the school cafeteria to combat the amount of food that was being thrown away by students every day. So, and that was successful. And now they've launched a sustainability coalition, and they've designed a sustainable speaker series that's going to launch this Friday, the 26th at 5:30, and the links. We have the links online on our article, but it's a virtual series. It's going to feature six influential leaders in various sustainability fields, and these are people whose work will inspire action and raise awareness around building a better future for the, you know, for this upcoming generation.
You know, and by the way, those links are available if you want to go, just very simply, go to theberkshireedge.com. You'll find the story right there and then click
on
the links right there. You don't have to go through any rabbit holes to find the links. They're right there and right up in the stories.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of websites.
Just click on them. Every bit of print that's red is a live link.
You know, there's a lot of websites and news websites that make you go down a rabbit hole and go through a million different things to get to the story, but not at your site. You can go right to the story and right to the links.
Yep.
Extremely user-friendly.
Right.
Well, it seems like, you know, it's interesting. Over the past 4 years, we finally don't have to talk about one thing that we've been talking about over the past 4 years, but and we all know what that is, but... Not cannabis. Cannabis
keeps coming back.
and another proposed outlet for South County.
Yep.
Yes. Well, it's not only a proposed outlet, but there are farms, cannabis farms, popping up everywhere. And, people are, especially in the town of Sheffield, and we're probably going to do more about that in the future. But this story is about a farm being proposed.
A proposed farm, yeah.
Proposed farm,
yeah.
Right.
That's in West Stockbridge, and, you know, it's a cultivation, what they call a cultivation facility.
In other words, a farm.
Yeah. But... anyways, the neighborhood is not happy about this. Notorious, let's say, agricultural operation in their neighborhood. So they're protesting.
You know, if I were a neighbor, I don't know if I'd protest a farm, but I think what I wouldn't want to be next to is a farm and a processing facility. Because when it's growing in the woods, there's no smell. But when you get the processing facilities, yes, there's no way you can get around the fact that that there's going to be a smell of marijuana in the air. And it is now officially legally a crop, I guess, in Massachusetts. And that obviously creates problems for towns to fight it.
Yep.
Right. Right.
So
I know, and I suppose what they're concerned about is, you know, once you're growing it, then who knows? It could become a cultivate. It could also become a processing plant. But the objection to this one in West Stockbridge is that it's on a residential street, and that's what they're concerned.
You know, you'd think that these people that want to do this would find an agricultural district and buy some land in an agricultural district.
Right.
Instead of a residential street, really.
I know.
I mean, there's lots of agricultural land out there.
There is, right.
And it might cost a little more to buy the land and to set it up because of what you want to do. Obviously the returns, obviously to these people it's not worth it. But, yeah, to put something in a residential area first without trying to go into an ag zone, you know that you're going to get pushback no matter where you are.
Right.
Also, it uses a lot of water.
Yeah.
That's the other issue that the town may have to, that people may be concerned about, too. So, but, you know, it's interesting that we have so many of these cultivation
right.
facilities in the Berkshires, it's especially South Berkshire. As we said, they're just popping up like mushrooms.
Yeah. Now, of course, the owner or the proposer, John Piasecki, says about this site, why he chose it is that it's got the sandy soil that the cannabis plants need. It was recently a logged parcel that was the home of a sawmill, and it's very large, so it allows for complete visual screening. There'll be trees all around the plant, or all around the growing area, and that the cultivation area is never less than 500 feet from any existing structure. It's a giant parcel, and we're going to be able to use 14 acres of existing woodlands as screening. So it's literally invisible from any of the roads around there. So,
I find that interesting. When I was many years ago, when I lived in Glenford, New York, we once took my roommates and I took a handful of seeds, marijuana seeds, and threw them out the back door in between the house and the pool.
Uh-huh.
Now I want to tell you this: we didn't take care of it. The thing grew into a huge marijuana bush, and we did nothing to it. We didn't do anything to it. We finally had to cut it down because it got higher than the house, and you could see it from the front of the house.
Wow.
You know, it's one of the. I tell you what, you give it water and sunshine, it's like corn.
Really?
You know, it's just gross.
Yeah.
So, it's one of those things that it's going to happen more and more, and I think you're going to find more and more states designating agricultural zones where you can grow cannabis.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the only way to get around putting it in a residential area.
Right. Yeah, because right now people are just looking for lots that are open.
Yeah. And that's not always necessarily the best thing in the world.
No.
Well, let's go on to a story that really affects everybody, and that is the BSO. Now, that for the first time, they've got a female CEO.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? It's really
is Arthur daunting. Fielder is Arthur Fielder spinning in his grave?
I don't know.
He might have liked it.
Yeah, you don't know, but it's amazing. You look at that. How long they've been around, and this is the first time that they've had a woman direct.
It's exciting. She comes from the Los Angeles Philharmonic, which has also been a real innovator. I mean, the LA Phil. I mean, they have. And this is a good idea because I know that the LA Phil, you know, they have their conductor Dudamel. I mean, he has, Asa, I'm forgetting the names, but they've had conductors in Los Angeles who have become kind of rock stars. You know, they're very popular. They've brought in young audiences. And, this woman has been part of that, and I think that's terrific. So you know, this is for not only for Tanglewood, but for the whole, you know, the Boston Symphony Orchestra.
I think it's a great move, and I think that, you know, especially in the Berkshires because of Tanglewood, interesting younger people in classical music is a much easier job here. And then it is, I think, even though they're successful, then it is in a major city like Boston.
Right.
So I think it's great because it opens it up once again to a, for the first time ever, it's nice to have a woman's perspective, because there's different perspectives on how you run a business and how you've grown up through the business. And if you're a woman and you make it to the top of an organization, God bless you. You've learned a lot. You've learned a lot over your years.
Oh, and you know, and when you consider the resistance to a woman taking on these positions, she must be very good.
You know, it's funny because I can go back to when I worked at the original WKZE in Sharon. We had a woman who became one of the leaders of it early on, and she was a very strong woman. And she was a very vocal woman, and she was a hard worker. And people told me, you're never going to... Well, I loved working with her, because you know why? She worked along with us. If she asked us to do something, she was there doing it. And she ended up leaving the company because she didn't get along with the owners. But that was my first exposure to someone who was a female that was in this broadcast industry, she just had everything you would want in a boss, everything.
Yeah. So, well, I hope she has success here. This is she's coming into an organization with great traditions of its own. But, you know, according to our article, I mean, and as I said, the L.A. Phil has been enormously successful.
If she had worked with the L.A. Phil, she's more than capable enough to handle.
For 25 years. Yeah. I mean, she's president of the Hollywood Bowl and chief operating officer of the Los Angeles Philharmonic. And really, this operation has had enormous community engagement and record financial growth, thriving community partnerships, and a number of groundbreaking program and performance spaces widely considered the industry gold standard. So these are the credentials that she brings. Los Angeles is really upset to lose her.
She's got the chops. There's no doubt about it. As the expression goes, there's no doubt about it.
Well, good for the good for the BSO.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
I want to move on to the more local story in Great Barrington. Now, which one of you sat down with the new police chief, or did you both sit down?
No. It wasn't us. It was our reporter Sheila Clary.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's great that you sat down and really do a one-on-one on what his plans are for the department, and as opposed to what's been happening in the past.
Yep. You know, we've had, I think this is really interesting. Of course, you know, he's been a member of the force for a number of years.
25
years. But he also replaces someone, Bill Walsh, who is, you know, a native of Stockbridge and has been a police chief for 40 years. So, you know, it's going to be, I'm not sure it's going to, that anybody's going to notice any difference, but Bill Walsh, I remember, used to walk the streets, even though he was chief, he would walk the streets of Great Barrington as if he were on the beat.
Yeah,
and he'd stop and talk to people who were residents, you know, whoever was strolling on the streets. He'd sit and watch. He'd stand in some of the storefronts and chat to people as they walked by. He's not someone who is sitting in his cruiser, you know, or behind a desk. He was actually out there, being very visible and accessible to people. Paul Storti is going to have to live up to that tradition, but I'm sure he will.
Well, as they said about the Storti family, the force is strong. The force is strong in his family.
The force is with them.
That's right. All right. Now I want to go on to your last story, and that is cultural organizations, the summer season, the pandemic, and more. I mean, here we are over a year later, and organizations like mine, like organizations like yours, nonprofits, all have the same fears about what is ahead or what is not ahead.
Well, yes.
Yeah, this is a.
Well, we had this story. I mean, we are, you know, we are closely monitoring what is happening with cultural institutions in anticipation of the summer season. And we are very pleased to see that a number of organizations, you know, we have heard rumors that, you know, Jacob's Pillow and the Berkshire Theater Festival and Barrington Stage are all planning some kind of a season. And, you know, they will accommodate the pandemic somehow, but it's not going to be like last year where nobody did anything. And, of course, nobody has heard from Tanglewood yet. But the story we had as part of our Business Monday package, we've created a Business Monday where we're focusing a lot of business stories, we're publishing them on Monday. But this one is about Shakespeare and Company building a new outdoor stage. Now, this is something that they have been thinking about for years, but I imagine it's the pandemic that really pushed them over the starting line. And they've cleared the space, and we have a sketch. I don't know if anybody else has published this, but we have a sketch of what this new amphitheater is going to look like, this outdoor theater, and it's under the trees, and it's going to be an outdoor, you know, a semicircular amphitheater with, you know, it's kind of bench-like seats, but it's, you know, it's just going to be tucked into the landscape and under the trees, which will be very lovely and goes back to the roots of Shakespeare and Company, because they used to perform on the grounds of the Mount, of Edith Wharton's house, yep. The Mount. And they, you know, we all remember going to Midsummer Night's Dream outdoors under the trees, and the characters were running around in between the trees.
Right. I mean, you know, Midsummer's Night's Dream, with all those magical creatures were supposed to be in the forest. Well, they were. It was not a prop. It was an actual tree. And they were, you know, they had illuminated the forest. And it was really magical. Mm. I mean, it was astonishing. But
so they're hoping to, you know, revive that, you know, and so they will have an additional they'll have an additional stage, because they already have their, you know, their main theater, and then they have the Elaine Bernstein Theater, and now they'll have this outdoor theater. And they have had a kind of makeshift, what they called the Roman Theater, which was a kind of outdoor performance space that they created, but this will be much more permanent. So that's very exciting, and we hear that Jacob's Pillow is going to be using its inside-out performance space for more performances than they have in the past. So, you know, I think we'll have a season. Which will, you know, I think will be very encouraging for everybody, and certainly the merchants who I know are, you know, have been suffering from lack of tourists. So,
all right. Well, there's those stories, and of course, when we talk on air, we just touch upon a few stories. There's just tons of stories at theberkshireedge.com, where you'll find, like I said, we just touch on just a few. But there's no dearth of information on that by your website. You guys
right.
do a great job.
We're publishing 5 and 6 stories a day.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, we touch on just a few.
Yep.
But
and we also have our calendar,
right.
So that people can look and can check in to see what is going to be available.
Well, that is the virtueedge.com, and that's why we speak to you guys every week.
Yep.
All right. Well, I want you guys to have a good week.
Yep, and,
thank you.
And we'll speak to you next week. Take care.
Bye. Bye-bye.
That is this week in Berkshire Edge on air, the berkshireedge.com on the web.